listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're on Reality Check Radio. It's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Listeners, regular listeners will recall that we had Richard Fennell on talking to us about the horrific usage of antidepressants, particularly amongst children, which I was able to confirm with my 13-year-old daughter. She has friends that are on antidepressants, would you believe? And the deleterious effects that they have on people, including suicidal thoughts. And we were contacted by Aaron Livingston, who said he could give a first-hand account talking about his experience of the mental health system with his brother. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning, Ronnie.
So tell me about your brother.
Yeah, so it's been, I think I gather, 11 years since my brother's been involved in the mental health sector. So 2013, he had a crisis. At that time, we believed the doctors, what they said. And at the time, he went through the whole system, everything in the ward.
Just hold it there, Aaron.
Yep.
How old was your brother then in 2013?
So he would have been about 18, I think.
Is he younger than you or older than you?
He's 7 years younger.
Okay. So he's 18. In 2013, he had a mental health crisis. When you say mental health crisis, what does that mean? What does that look like? What was
that? So what we experienced kind of looked similar to a mental breakdown, just uncontrollable crying.
Oh, wow.
And that type of thing. And then we had to get the mental health involved.
Was there any background to that, or did it just start?
No, it just started out of the blue.
Wow. And so the main manifestation was just uncontrollable sadness and crying?
Yeah.
For no reason?
Yeah, no reason.
This isn't usual?
Yes, no, wasn't usual.
It's not usual. So you go off to see your doctor?
Yep, so we went and took him to the doctors, went through the whole process. And then at that time, because he was 18, he was still on the youth part of the mental health system.
Okay.
And so the process led to being sectioned, which is the Mental Health Act, whenever something like this happens.
What does sectioned mean?
So sectioned on the Mental Health Act means that the doctors go through a process of wanting to assess if someone needs more professional and longer care than what the initial process is at the beginning.
Yeah.
So
did they indicate to you at this stage, as you're going through this quote mental health process, did they indicate to you what was the problem or diagnosis?
Well, so the diagnosis officially is schizophrenia.
Okay.
But my family and I's opinion is that that was just arbitrary to get him into the system. But that's a whole other story.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So they labelled it schizophrenia, and you're at that stage believing them.
Actually, in hindsight, we were disapproving of that because what was happening with the doctor was the questions were being asked the questions were being asked one after the other, the same question, are you hearing voices? Are you hearing voices over and over and over?
No.
Well, we were thinking, well, come on, this is a kind of overreach. At the time we didn't know anything about the system or who to complain to, where to go to.
So they were sort of looking back in hindsight, they were sort of badgering him and bullying him?
Yeah, pretty much.
And you were present for this?
Yes, we were present, but we weren't in the room with him while he was being questioned.
You were watching?
No, we weren't allowed in the room, period. So it was the doctor and my brother alone.
And so how do you know the form the questions took?
So after the interview stages, my brother came out and basically told us, oh, no, the doctor's just answering me the same questions over and over again.
Goodness me. That seems unprofessional.
Exactly, yeah. And so from that, later on, they did do some medical testing and found that my brother was deficient in B12 vitamins in his bloodstream.
Not schizophrenic.
Not schizophrenia, but even though that's still on this record and that's how they see Simon.
Because once you have it on your record, it's there for all time.
Yes, yeah, there for all time. And you really have to go through a long process to try and get that off. But I have no idea how.
So vitamin B12 is an easy fix, is it not?
It was, yes. My brother was even prescribed B12 injections, which actually improved his health.
So?
So at the
he's good to go then?
Yeah, at the time he was good to go, but he was still on these psychiatric drugs as well.
Ah. And what were these drugs?
So the first was, I think, clonazepam and risperidol.
They're scary drugs, right?
Yeah. And so over the course of these 11 years, he's been up and down. He's also been taken off a drug, put on another drug. So it's a big roller coaster, really.
So he goes in, uncontrollably crying. He gets questioned.
Yeah.
And his words repeatedly ask the same question over and over.
Yeah.
He gets a diagnosis of schizophrenia and prescribed heavy psychiatric drugs.
Yeah.
At this similar period, they diagnose a vitamin B12 deficiency.
Yeah.
He gets vitamin B12 injected and his health improves, including his mental health, you think?
Yes, his mental health did improve around those stages.
However, he still got the prescription drugs to take.
Yeah.
And he still got the diagnosis on his file.
Yeah.
So, potentially, he could have been fixed with the vitamin B12 full stop.
Yeah, exactly. Even maybe some counselling or something along those lines. But what we've found,
So you're in the drugs. You then said that they kept changing the drugs.
Yeah.
And then having no drugs and then different drugs. And what was that sort of experimenting to see what might work?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So experimenting on what might be causing different effects, side effects, or different things that they may have been seeing on the ward where, I mean, we would only know going through his records.
So was he taken into an institution?
Yes, it was in the Wellington Te Whareo Matarangi.
What's that?
So that's the Wellington Mental Health Ward. So that's where everyone goes if you're in the Wellington region. It's either that ward or one of the ones in Lower Hutt.
So this is one full over the cuckoo's nest ward.
Pretty much.
That's a very, very serious thing to have happen to your brother.
Yep. And I mean, it's not just my brother. I know my family and I know a few others overseas that are going through the same thing.
Yes, because you've got busy on it.
Yeah.
So why did they feel the need to keep him in a ward rather than let him be at home?
I guess they were just going through their protocols. And in the process they go through.
Were you happy to have him at home?
Oh, for sure.
I don't mean to pry, but you've got a mum and a dad?
Yeah, so I've still got my mother. She's living at home with me and my brother currently.
Yes.
But my dad passed away last year.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
Thanks.
It's hard when you lose your dad.
Oh, for sure.
My dad died 11 years ago, and I still struggle. Not struggle, that's the wrong word, but miss him and think of him every day.
Yeah, that's what you do, yeah.
And I so wish I had him to talk to.
Yep.
It wasn't like you said, here, take my brother and you look after him.
No.
They decided they would look after him.
Yeah.
So did they give you a choice? Did they give you a choice?
At that time, no.
So did they somehow compulsorily take your brother?
Yeah. So when you're on the mental health act, that's a compulsory order to notify the patient that they're under the care of the mental health system.
No. God, I'm naive. I sat in Parliament for 15 years and I thought you had to be sort of like criminally dangerous. Was your brother dangerous?
No. So this side of things is for the civil part of mental health, where I think I understand if you have done something criminal, you go through a whole different system altogether.
Okay. Was he a danger to himself?
No.
So just let me get this right? You're happy to have your brother at home?
Yep.
Back then it was your mum and your dad and you.
Back then it was still my mum. My parents divorced.
Okay.
So my dad was living somewhere else.
Yeah. Okay. So your mum and you were happy to have your brother stay with you?
Yeah.
But the doctors said no.
Yeah, that was never an option.
And when they took him, did they tell you this is for a little while or what?
Yeah, they just told us it was for a period of time. I think they go through a process of evaluating the patient for a period of time and then they tell you, well, this is the next process. So there is a lot of lack of communication between the family and the patient because obviously the privacy reasons. Unless you're an actual next of kin on the records.
Wouldn't you be the next of kin on the records?
I am now, but back then it was between the doctor and patient.
Gee whiz. And I imagine your brother changed through this process.
Oh, dramatically.
In what ways?
So we were seeing, while on the drugs, his mental cognitive abilities decline. So normal things like making breakfast, doing other different things. His attention span was shot. Right now we're in the process of tapering him off the drugs, and we're actually seeing slowly over time his cognitive abilities improve.
We had the doctor on about tapering.
Yeah.
So you're following a protocol for tapering a person off psychiatric drugs?
Yeah. We're working with Simon's doctor to taper, because we've pretty much told this doctor our perspective. And it's just by the grace of God that he's able to work with us on this, because no other doctors would dare touch it.
So you know your brother very well. Your mum knows her son very well.
Yeah.
You could tell if these drugs were affecting him negatively.
Yeah, for sure.
And they are.
Yeah, definitely. Even now, to the point he's dependent on the drugs while coming off.
Incredible. How, let's walk back, right? Because yeah. I sound stupid because I should know this, but I don't and didn't. Your brother gets in the mental health system.
Yeah.
They prescribe drugs. Take him away from you. Put him in a Maori named hospital, which is a mental health institution, and take total control of his life.
Yeah.
Without you having an ability to advocate for him.
No.
Because at that stage, you're not next of kin.
No. I mean, we can give input, but by practice, the doctors are acting on behalf of the patient.
How long was he in the institution for?
So it's been periodically off and on since 2013 to now. He's had a few hiccups because of the withdrawal effects, you could say, from the drugs. So from 2013, about 2018, he was put back in. And that was around the time we actually started tapering him off these drugs.
So getting off the drugs.
Yeah.
Has been a 6-year process.
Yeah. For some people, they said nearly a whole lifetime. With also adverse effects.
And when you withdraw the drugs, they have terrible effects of withdrawal.
Yeah.
What are they like?
Oh, horrible. My brother described it as like your whole body feels like it's on fire, like your nervous system is just totally being attacked. You get migraines, obviously. I mean, different effects. I mean, even agitative outbursts. Yeah, it's just a whole lot of different effects.
And if they get the drug, those effects go away, but they're left almost semi-vegetative because of their lack of time. Sorry.
Yeah, so most of the time they'll just put the drug back on, thinking, oh, the patient's improved. But really that's just the brain calming down, thinking, oh, it's great, I've got the drugs back. But and more than often it's just explained by the doctors that it's a part of the patient's condition rather than the drug. So they don't fully believe that there's these types of withdrawal effects happening.
So in effect, the drugs make you sick.
Yeah.
Then that becomes a rationale to keep you locked up.
Yeah.
Keep giving you the drugs. And then on top of that, your body becomes dependent on the drugs.
Exactly, yeah.
So it's a one-way street when you take these drugs.
Catch 22, yeah.
Has anyone through this process sat down with you or your mum and explained all this? Or have you had to figure it out yourself?
No, we've all had to figure it out ourselves through internet, books, other psychiatric survivors, you could say. So, yeah. And then pretty much you have no support in a lot of these areas because the support out there is controlled by the same narrative.
I'm speechless. It's
yeah.
Let me just tell everyone that you're on Reality Check Radio. It's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde, and we're talking to Aaron Livingston. What's your brother's name?
So my brother's name's Simon.
Simon. You must love him.
Oh, for sure. What about any other brother?
You're his full-time carer now.
Yeah.
What does that look like?
So it's pretty much just keeping an eye 24/7 for the withdrawal effects, just making sure he doesn't get into a state where he's going to harm anyone because of the withdrawal effects. We do get out now and then.
And if he starts to have a withdrawal effect, you have to make a calculation about what? Stopping the taper, upping his dose, or toughening it out?
Yes. Yeah, so the decision would be to figure out, well, you know, can we mitigate it ourselves? Because frankly, we don't want anything to do with the system anymore.
No, no, because if you ring for help, they'll lock them up.
No, yeah, exactly.
And drug
them. And then they'll put the dose back up or down, or they'll change the drug again. And so it's like a never-ending cycle. So, yeah, that's just pretty much what life is at the moment.
You've got two petitions going.
Yeah.
Tell me about them.
So one, there's a petition to ban electroshock therapy for the whole nation. In my view, that's pretty much torture. You're torturing patients. And the doctors that I've heard, I could name drop one, which is Peter Bregan, has extensively gone to court over trying to ban electroshock in the United States.
Has your brother had that?
No, he was going to have it, but we got a hold of CCHR, which is the Citizen Commission on Human Rights in New Zealand, that advised us to write up a legal document so that it would stop the doctor from going ahead with that procedure based on religious and ethical grounds.
So the doctors that were caring for your brother decided, without your input, to attach electrodes to his brain and put through a current through the brain.
But thank God we were able to stop it before it happened. I mean, we're hearing overseas that some people are having up to 20 shocks at once.
And this is just a madcap idea, right?
Exactly, yep.
And in order to stop your brother from having this, you had
to write an illegal document. Because otherwise, they, per the Mental Health Act, the doctor can just force someone to have it without the consent.
And this was when he was within the institution.
Yes.
So in a way.
So that was at a time when they were thinking, well, the drugs weren't working. Let's try shock treatment.
Double down on everything.
Yeah.
It's very hard to listen to you talk, Aaron, about your brother Simon and not use bad language.
Oh, I've used it a few times.
You were fortunate to find out that they were proposing electric shock treatment because presumably they could have just done it.
Yeah.
But so you found out.
Without our consent or knowledge.
When you stopped the doctors from doing it.
Yeah.
Did they apologize?
No. So the doctor at the time we gave the document to just tried to rationale around it, but didn't actually say whether they were going to go ahead with it or not. So whether he did have the shock treatment, we don't know. We'd have to go through his records to find out.
So he could have had it even, he could have had it and you not know.
Yeah.
I didn't know they still did that.
Yeah, they still do it. I mean, we thought at their time that they'd banned it. And to find out they were still doing it, we were even shocked.
Because there's not even any science in there, right? It's just like, oh, we'll go do this next.
And these there's no science behind any of it. They're drugs work.
It's terrifying, right?
Yep, sure is, yeah.
So if you have a loved one who is under some affliction, in the case of your brother, uncontrollable crying and inexplicable crying. Stay away from the system.
Yeah. I'm not a doctor, but that would be my exact advice.
Once they've got your hooks into you, and we're training all these young kids literally to say they've got mental health issues, right?
Yeah.
As soon as that comes out of your mouth, you could end up in a very dark place because you've surrendered potentially yourself under the Mental Health Act.
Yeah.
Where your liberty and the sovereignty and autonomy of what goes into your body is lost to you.
Yeah, exactly.
So never ever suggest that you're not well in the head.
No.
And looking back, if you hadn't approached the doctor and just left your brother crying, he could be in a far better place now.
Yeah, he could have been here with some natural therapy.
But back then, we were trusting.
Yeah.
The doctor that's helping you with the tapering.
Yeah.
Is he sort of in the system or sort of out of the system?
Yeah, he's in the system, but he's willing to go with us in the process.
Right. Because you've got a professional that you can trust.
Yeah.
What do you think of the other ones?
Well, all they're pretty much on the same system. So, the doctors that we've been looking into who are trying to reform psychiatry are the more reliable ones, but a lot of them have their own private practice and aren't a part of the system.
And cost a lot of money.
Exactly. And there's not anyone that we know of that has the same opinion that we have in the country as a whole. So you've effectively got no doctor to turn to.
Because it's a small little club here in New Zealand. You've got a second petition. What's that one?
Yeah, so that one's to amend the Mental Health Act in reflection and agreement with the Bill of Rights Act 1990. So it gives the patient the option to refuse medication or treatment.
Well, if you've not committed a crime, right, I can understand if you're a bad person.
Yeah.
And they say, even then I struggle, right?
Yeah.
Because commit a crime, do the time, but don't take drugs.
But I think the way they do it legally, I'm not a lawyer, but the autonomy of the person changes once you're on the act. So once you're on that, you're now considered under a different form of rules.
The Bill of Rights. Yes. And your brother, as long as there's a diagnosis of schizophrenic.
Yeah.
Who can get him off that?
I don't know at the moment. I mean, we're pretty much fighting the system at the moment. We've actually gone through the Health and Disability Commissioner. So we've sent a complaint through them, which is in an ongoing process. But we don't know where to go to actually get that stricken off.
Have you been to see your local MP?
No, not yet.
do that, you might be surprised, because they can go, even if they're a Labor MP, they can go straight to the minister.
Yeah.
And I would recommend that, and let us know and come back on the show and explain what happened.
Yeah.
So how long have you been full-time caring for your brother?
Let's see. It was around about 2018. So that's was, yes, 2018 was when I started. That's when I quit my job. Yeah.
And get the tapering going and get him off the drugs.
Yeah.
What was your job?
So I was working for cash converters for a while.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And so, yeah, 2018 came along and I thought, now I've got to look after my brother. He's the priority. So I had to decided to quit and take it on full time.
So your life's a bit on hold.
Yeah.
Girlfriends and family for yourself.
Yeah.
How's your mum?
Oh, she's all over the place sometimes, but, you know, she copes. But, you know, she's you know, the mother, you know. She doesn't want to see her child in the way he is.
When you started back in 2018, would you think back then that you'd still be on drugs 6 years later?
No, we thought it would have been a bit more quicker, but it's obviously turned out to be, you know, a slow and long process.
Can you see an end to it where your brother is off drugs and returned to you?
Oh, for sure. He'll be off them one day and we'll be able to say, hey, look, you know, this is my brother. He's better off these drugs than he was on them.
You said in your introduction to me that this drugs are harder to quit than cocaine.
Yeah. So the doctor named Peter Briggan has found that out, that it's much harder to come off these psychiatric drugs than the normal street drug because of what they do to the brain. So they affect your, I can't remember what it's called, but the process of where the dopamine interacts. So they completely block anything to do with the process in your brain to do with sleep. And that's why a lot of them are just sedatives, because they effectively just change your sleep patterns and the brain itself.
And these drugs are widely prescribed.
Yeah.
To young people.
Yep, young people. I mean, in the name of ADHD as well.
Same drugs?
Yeah.
Jeepers creepers. Did they always have, in your reading and research on the internet, do they always have the same effect as they've had in the case of your brother, or do some people have an ability to take them, go off them, and they're okay? Like, does it vary from person to person?
It depends on the person. So some people could go cold turkey and be perfectly fine. And then some others, they'll, you know, these side effects will debilitate them so much that they get these things, this symptom called akathisia, where you've got uncontrollable shaking.
Did your brother get that?
No, yeah, but he got the opposite, which was, I think, like being agitated and uncontrollable in terms of sitting down or wanting to stand up, you know. He would have that for a while.
You suggested earlier that the withdrawal symptoms for Simon can be so severe that he becomes dangerous.
Yeah.
Because he needs the drug.
Yeah, because the drug's not in the system. So it affects the cognitive ability of the person. It even actually says it on the prescription information that the side effect could be agitation and just uncontrollable movements like that.
So could he, through the withdrawal process, hurt you?
Yeah. I mean, he could hurt me or my mother.
Would that be like he attacks you because he needs the drug?
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's like a, what I've experienced is that it looks like a delusional bout of delirium. So you'd be in this state of mind where he doesn't realize it and he'll do something that could hurt us. And then a few minutes later, he'd be fine and he'd forget that it even happened because he didn't realize he did it. And it's even on the prescription information that one of the side effects is delirium.
And what do you do if he does this?
So we've had to experiment ourselves on what can you do. And the best option that we've come up with is that you just have to be calm, not engage, just tell him to go to his room or we'll go for a walk, just to get himself focused on getting himself through it rather than come to a point where we're at each other.
If he went for a walk, is he safe?
Yeah, he's safe when you go for a walk. If I'm with him, or he'll say, "Oh, okay. I'm going to my friend's place." His friend will, you know, he'll have a chat with his friend. 10 minutes later, he's calmed down. He's fine. He's back home.
Because he's a fully grown man, right? How old is he now?
Yeah, he's 30.
And how old are you?
I'm 38.
And you started tapering him off the drug when you were 32.
Yep.
Is he 50% less drugs now?
Yeah, so he's completely off one of the drugs. He was on two. He's now just on one drug, and that's about 90 milligrams at the moment. So he was on 100 milligrams. I mean, even that's way too much.
And so you try and get him down to 80?
Yep, so eventually we'll try and get him to 80. And then we'll talk to his doctor and say, well, okay, this might be enough. We'll keep him at a couple of months at that level and then maybe come off some more later.
These pharmaceutical companies have got a lot to answer to.
Well, they do, yeah. I mean, they're hiding so much. I mean, to name drop Peter Briggan again, he's the only one that's been successful in suing a lot of the pharmaceutical companies in America.
We had a, I'm looking, do you know how you spell Peter Briggan? What's his last name?
So Peter? P-E-T-E-R.
Yeah.
And then Briggan, B-R-E-G-G-I-N.
Oh, there he goes. Born in 1936, so he's an old man. He's 88.
Yeah, he's been doing this over nearly a decade or so, and you know, psychiatry is still what it is today.
He's the author of many books critical of psychiatric medication, including Toxic Psychiatry, Talking Back to Prozac, Talking Back to Ritalin. His most recent book, Brain Disabling Treatments in Psychiatry, discusses his theory of medication, spellbinding, in which patients are said to do worse after treatment but fail to see this or recognize why. The adverse effects of drugs and electroconvulsive therapy, ECT, the hazards of diagnosing and medicating children. Brigham's theory of a psychopharmaceutical complex and guidelines for psychotherapy and counselling. Brigham's latest book is COVID-19 and the Global Predators. We Are the Prey, which is critical of the global COVID-19 response and explores who profits from a pandemic. And he lives in Finger Lakes, Central New York. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I interviewed, and I'm trying to think of the name, of an Australian living in Seattle, I think, who was...
His name, would it be Joseph or Yosef?
Yes, Yosef.
Maybe. Yeah, yeah. I've been watching a few of his videos.
And I, again, had no idea. And, of course, he didn't give me – he had to be careful. He couldn't talk to me. Yosef Witt-Doering.
Yeah.
Dr. Yosef Witt-Doering. He's a psychiatrist. And he's got a complicated name, but he is originally an Australian, if my memory's right. And he discussed this with me. And – but it was in, if you like, generalities –
yeah.
And now we've got the specific example of Simon.
Yeah.
Who's been lost for 13 years.
Yeah.
Have you watched the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
It's that, right?
It's exactly that, but compulsory, where... That movie was voluntary. So, yes, it looks like it's, with that movie, it was even harder to get out of the system if you even...
But that movie, it's worse than the movie.
I'd say it's about the same as the movie.
And that movie has to have been like 1976 or something, right?
Yeah.
So that is 50 years ago.
Yeah.
And here we are in 2024. I think we're living in enlightened times.
Yeah.
And you can go to your doctor with a complaint about your brother having uncontrollable crying, end up being dosed up, end up being made unwell, end up being under the Mental Health Act, end up being detained in a mental health institute, end up being prescribed involuntarily, and end up with electroconvulsive therapy where they're basically zapping parts of your brain to see if it makes a difference. And all the while they're gaslighting you, saying that you're not well in the head. And you're not well in the head because of the drugs they're giving you. You wake up to the fact that it's the drugs that they're giving you, but you can't get off them. Because when you taper off the drugs, you go insane.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
How many people do you know in New Zealand affected like your brother?
Personally, we don't know anyone. It's just... my family and I doing this on our own. I mean,
you don't seem you don't seem bitter or angry. Are you past that point?
No, I've gone through all that already. I'm just to the point where it's just, you know, charging through with petitions, with complaints, just getting trying to get the job done, really. Yeah.
Well, you're a young man, your brother's young.
Yeah.
And you will beat it.
Yeah.
Would you mind if myself and listeners prayed for you and Simon?
No, I don't mind.
We will do that.
Thanks.
Because you've certainly touched me, and I'm sure you've touched listeners.
Yeah. And like I said, I mean, I'm a believer myself.
Are you?
We wouldn't have been able to be where we are right now if it wasn't for God and Yeshua. We're Messianic Jews.
Oh, are you?
Yes. Yeah.
You're Jewish?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. How interesting. Oh, my goodness. I'm going to fire off, get a few emails because I'm a 100% supporter of the Jewish people in Israel.
Thanks. And the, needed right now.
And the history of the Jewish people was like none other.
Yeah.
Because for 5,000 years, people have worked to wipe you off the face of the earth.
Yeah. And they're trying to do it again.
And you didn't have a country for a while.
No. A
couple of thousand years. And you are the history of the Bible.
Yeah.
So, what's a miss? Well, you're Jewish, but you said you're
Messianic Jewish. So
what does that mean?
In Jesus and his Hebrew name, Yeshua.
Ah. Ah, Messiah. So you are Jews that believe what about Jesus?
And Jesus, so we believe he is the Messiah.
Oh, really? I didn't know there was such a thing.
Yeah.
So you're not Christian.
There's a lot of us around, but we're spread around sporadically through New Zealand. There's not much of a community.
So you're Jewish, but believe that Jesus is the Messiah.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make you Christian.
No. In my opinion, we're missing at Jews because we also, even believing in Jesus as Messiah, we believe that he didn't do away with the Old Testament stuff either.
Got it. And do you believe that he died and was resurrected?
Yeah. We believe that, yeah.
But doesn't a Christian believe in the Old Testament too?
They do to some extent, but a lot of the theology around the explanation is that Jesus came and did rid of the whole
law and
came
page.
With his own new commandments.
I might be a Messianic Jew. I'm an Old Testament man too. I see. Isn't that interesting?
My family and I believe that the Old Testament law still is forever.
Well, it's God's word.
Yeah, and Yeshua came and to strengthen that law.
Yes.
He did his miracles around the law.
Yes. And,
yeah.
Do you trace your heritage then back directly to Jesus, or were Messianic Jews something that started hundreds of years later?
So I believe that Missing at Jews were the original movement that Yeshua started.
Yes, that's right, because they were Jewish.
And then Rome came along with Constantine
and took it off you.
Christianity and paganism together and created this new form of Christianity.
Could I become a Messianic Jew?
Of course. But if you're Jewish yourself,
so I can't be, because I'm not Jewish, because that's a hereditary thing, you're in a hereditary Jew.
Yeah, hereditary Jew. But how I've come to see it is that Yeshua provided a way for Gentiles, non-Jews, to also be an inheritance under Israel.
Yes.
So you'd be a Messianic believer in that sense if you were a non-Jew.
Yes. But I would just be a Christian that believed the Bible was the inspired word of God.
Yeah.
Old and New Testament.
What I believe is that it's like, it's the same way as like if you were to assimilate to New Zealand. So I see that through Yeshua, Gentiles assimilate to Israel through Yeshua.
Yes. How do the other Jews regard the Messianic Jews?
It depends who you talk to. I mean, there's a lot out there totally disagree. Some might get really angry, or, you know, some out there are actually friends with the Christian community. It really depends.
I'm a very newly minted Christian from last year, and I'm loving the journey, but I'm loving the study, and I wish I had more hours in a day to read more and study more. And there's great questions, right?
Yeah.
And you realize that not everything can be answered because God is mysterious. But I got talking with someone about the Trinity. I think it was Ashley Church. Yeah. And I've always struggled with that, you see. And some listener sent me a lovely, lovely book on Unitarianism.
Yeah.
And I hadn't realized that this has been almost like a war within Christian circles, right? And I don't know what it is about us as people that we want to split off into our little sects. And you think Jesus came to earth with a simple message, a difficult message in many ways, but full of grace and full of truth, and showed us the way. And it's not difficult. It's not complicated, but it's difficult because it's difficult to be a good person.
Yeah.
But he showed us that he was perfect. And we struggled to be better people. But he didn't divide us. He brought people together.
No. Exactly. Yeah.
And I don't understand why people divide over it. Maybe this is because I'm naive, but like, I can understand you having a different view to me. I can understand people interpreting the Bible differently. But that to actually get angry and upset and fight over it is to entirely miss the point of what Jesus taught us.
Exactly, yeah.
Isn't it? And I struggle with that. And even things like, to me, the Trinity is just a fascinating thing. And, you know, there's God, the Holy Spirit, and the Son. And, or was it just God? And this could get you thrown out.
And exactly, yeah.
Messianic Jew. I'd heard the phrase, but I didn't realize what that meant.
Yeah.
Oh, well, and of course, So your mum is Jewish?
Yeah. So it's on my mum's side that we found out, but we don't know where it traces back to.
Oh, how interesting.
We did a DNA test.
How interesting. And that faith gets you through the day.
100%.
And allows you even to forgive.
Yeah.
Well, Aaron, what a wonderful, uplifting note with which to end this interview. Could you please keep in touch with us?
We'll do, yeah.
And can you tell us again how people can sign your petitions?
Yep, so the petitions are on the main Parliament petition website. So it'll be in there. The two petitions will be there.
And we search for them under Aaron Livingston. I'll go and sign both directly. I will pray for you and your brother, if you don't mind a Gentile doing that.
No, thanks. We need all the prayers we need.
And our listeners will. And you'll keep in touch, please.
Yeah.
And thank you for sharing with us what is a tough time and a difficult journey. And thank you for sharing us your faith.
Yeah, thanks.
That was Aaron Livingston. What a story. And to think that just down the road from me, mums and dads think they're doing the best thing for their kids, prescribing antidepressants and other psychiatric drugs for their kids, ADHD, or here, take this. And these can have a devastating consequence. And here in New Zealand, we have a monolithic health system that says no, all good. And then if the drugs affect you badly, you come within their moor and you're trapped and you can be locked up and you can be prescribed against your will and have your soul and your mind taken from you. And indeed you can be tortured, which is what electric ECT, I'll say, is torture against your will and against your family's will. I'm certainly going to sign those petitions. Thank you for listening, everyone. We truly are blessed to have a platform and an opportunity to share the sad story of Simon Livingston and the loving story of his brother looking after him and fighting single-handedly on his own against the system. You can send me a text at 2057, email me, inbox@radleycheck.radio. Thank you for listening.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.